some about the preview of the 2019-2020 competition. We are here to talk about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program for the next application cycle, which is around the corner, and it will be launched next month in March. My name is Aphrodita Krasnici. I am the Outreach and Recruitment Analyst at the IIE office in New York City, and I'm joined here by my colleague Michelle Bellucci, based in IIE office in Washington, D.C. This is essentially going to be an opportunity for you to learn about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program and prepare for your award competition for 2019-2020. And when I say 2019-2020, I mean that the academic year 2019-2020. So just so that we're clear on that. Both Michelle and I will present the overall process, and even though the competition hasn't started yet, and it will start on March 1st, we want you to feel prepared for it. We want to present those opportunities to you, and we will show you how to find them on the catalog of awards, which still has the award for 2018-2019. But if you have any questions during the presentations, we're more than happy to answer them. Just type them in the box on the right side of your screen. Let us know also if you have any troubles hearing during the presentation. We will be addressing the questions at the end, and if we don't manage to answer all of your questions, you can always reach out to us at the email address scholars@iie.org. So let's talk about the Fulbright program. And what is the Fulbright program? The Fulbright program is a very competitive scholarship program. It's a merit-based grant for international educational exchange for scholars, academics, and professionals. Even artists can apply for this program. It was founded by United States Senator J. William Fulbright in 1946. And here you can see a photo on your left-hand side, the legacy of the Fulbright program. And even though it started in 1946, the first scholar went in 1960, and it was in Burma. The scholar went in Burma. And also on the right-hand side, you can see a picture of a scholar very recently that attended the Fulbright Arctic Award. So under the Fulbright program, competitively selected U.S. citizens may become eligible for scholarships to teach, conduct research, or both combined by exercising their talents abroad. And even citizens of other countries may qualify to do the same in the U.S. And we will talk about this later on. The program was established to increase mutual understanding between the people of the United States and other countries through the exchange of persons, knowledge, and skills. It is one of the most prestigious scholarships in the world. The main stakeholders of the Fulbright program are the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs of the U.S. Department of State under policy guidelines established by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board, with the help of 50 binational Fulbright commissions, U.S. embassies, and cooperating organizations in the U.S. In the country where there is no Fulbright commission active or there is no Fulbright commission, the public affairs section of the U.S. embassy administers the Fulbright program, including recruiting and nominating candidates for grants to the U.S. IIE is a very important stakeholder, and by the way, IIE celebrates now the 99th birthday and was created to catalyze educational exchange. So it administers the program in the U.S. And Fulbright program is IIE's largest program to date. And why is the Fulbright program so prestigious? We can cover that on our next slide. It is one of the most prestigious programs in the world, and as you can see how big the Fulbright family is, over 380,000 participants have attended the Fulbright program since 1946, and the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program sends about 800 participants annually worldwide. It is active in 160 countries, participates in 160 countries, And many, many heads of state governments are alumni of the Fulbright program. Just to mention, the president of Croatia, by the way, she's the first woman president of Croatia. She was a Fulbrighter herself, the prime minister of Slovenia, and many others. So many, many Fulbrighters have received Nobel Prizes, Pulitzer Prize, and MacArthur Fellows, and also Presidential Medal of Freedom. The Fulbright program is also a step into getting Nobel Peace Prize or just any Nobel Prize. What do the Fulbright U.S. Scholar programs offer? The Fulbright U.S. Scholar program that we refer to it as teaching, it offers teaching or research. And we also have the International Education Administrator Seminars, which offers opportunities for two-week seminars for faculty administrators. And it also offers collaborative research. As you can see in our breakdown here, this is the recent data, the percentage of U.S. scholars in 17-18 academic year were 90%, whereas the IE seminar participants were 10%. What does the CORE program support? The CORE program supports teaching, research, or both combined from 3 to 12 months. Program is active in more than 125 countries, and it is a combination of many different awards. And it is meant for faculty, academics, and professionals in different fields or disciplines. Some awards offer opportunities in all disciplines, and it is up to you to tell what you're interested in, keeping in mind that you have to make a case for your application. The next competition will open very soon, on March 1st, and you will see every single award that is listed with full description of each opportunity. Just to clarify that the award means the opportunity, whereas the grant means the funding. Therefore, one award might offer one or more grants. So there will be funding for more, one or more grants. So after considering and reviewing the catalog of awards, you can apply for one of the awards only per year. Deadline for application for the CORE program will be August 1st, 2018. The vast majority of the host institutions worldwide are education institutions, but they might also include universities, museums, research centers, labs, government institutions, and many, many others. They cannot be for-profit institutions. Some awards offer teaching and some offer research, but the vast majority offer research. And the next slide is we're going to talk about who is eligible for getting a U.S. Scholar Award. First of all, it's very important to note that you have to be a U.S. citizen in order for you to apply for the U.S. Scholar Program. And in terms of the degree, the requirements vary by award. A PhD or other terminal degrees may be required. Terminal degree may be required. Many awards are open to applicants with a master's and a professional or academic experience. It is open to professionals and artists outside academia with recognized standing and substantial accomplishments. So not necessarily you have to be a university professor or academic in order for you to apply for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Teaching experience is different for every award, and there are also new policies on previous Fulbright Scholar grants, and however, the waiting period between those two grants has to be 2 years. So keep that in mind. If you have received a Fulbright before, you certainly are eligible to apply for another Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Just that the waiting period between the grants has to be 2 years. So from the moment you finished your grant, previous grant, to the moment when you decide to apply has to be 2 years. In terms of how the process works for the core Fulbright program, first of all, you need to decide what you want to do in terms of the activities. You want to do teaching or research or both combined, and where you want to go, the country or the institution that you want to work with. As a second step in the process is to develop the project and identify the location. This is very important. Then the third one, of course, is apply. And during these periods of time from the when you start and you decide what you want to do and the activities that you want to pursue, until the time you apply, we will always be available with questions that you might have. And we can cover that later where you can contact us. After you have applied, there is a peer review, so your colleagues in the same discipline or even the peer reviewers will review your application and will determine the further recommendations or non-recommendations. And the last component is that you prepare for your grant and bon voyage if you get selected. How do you select the right award? Half of the battle is selecting the right award, actually. Keep in mind that you can apply to one award per year. You need to narrow to one award that will match your profile. If you have regional experience, this will help you boost your application, and it is important for you to select it and realize what makes you more competitive. So match your expertise, experience, and proposal to the award description. If you prefer a certain discipline, they're all listed in the award. And if this matches your expertise, consider that. It is a very important factor to consider if the project is relevant to the hosting country. And why will the hosting country benefit from your project? So if you're doing teaching as an activity, if you're proposing a syllabi to teach at a university, just make sure to tailor your teaching or the syllabi according to the host institution needs. And it is open to all career levels, and early career, postdoc, mid-level, or even if you are in the distinguished chair. Now, if I can share with you some exciting news, as you might know, some of you who have experience in the Fulbright program, we have the catalog of award, which from year to year, it does not change much. But we just wanted to highlight some of the topics that you can look out in the new catalog of awards. Currently, there are about 471 awards offered, and we're hoping to have also some of the awards that were offered in the past that were successful to continue them and offer them. But here are some of the highlights. For Europe and Eurasia, some of the disciplines that we would like to highlight this year, media literacy, cybersecurity, public policy. For the Sub-Saharan Africa region, there will be opportunities in biological sciences, chemistry, engineering, information sciences, and even medical sciences. For Middle East and North Africa, there will be architecture offered in the discipline as well as political science. East Asia and the Pacific, American studies, art history, non-US history even. For the West Ham, we will have disciplines in visual arts, public policy, education, health, etc. And the highlight for the South and Central Asia will be postdoc awards and even teaching English as a foreign language. So these are just some of the highlights, and there will be a variety of other awards offered as well. So the Fulbright program has evolved over the years, and in order to suit the busy schedules that the scholars have, they've developed this flex option, which means flexibility option. So The Flex option is designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country over short segments. Applicants must indicate plans for Flex in your project statement, including a project timeline. So keep this in mind. If you can't stay for a long period of time in a hosting country, you can certainly look for the Flex option if it is offered in the award, because it is available in 63 countries, and it allows multiple visits over 2 years. Then we have other opportunities, the awards throughout your career. So at any level in your career, you can apply for the U.S. Scholar Program. If you're at the postdoctoral level, you can apply. We have opportunities for that. Early career scholars, and even as a distinguished chair. Multi-country awards include multi-country, that means you can apply for one award that is offered in two or more countries, so two countries in general within one region. So this past year we had, for example, an award in Europe that was offered in Greece and Spain. There are opportunities for global scholar awards, and this means you can apply for an award in two world regions. This is a very innovative, and it was added very recently to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. The project must include at least two world regions, works typically in two or three different countries. It should be in two or three segments over as much as 2 years, but not longer than that. Topics must benefit from a global perspective, and you must specify why each country, what will be accomplished, and when each country segment is planned. So to make this even more attractive, the home university affiliation is not required. So you don't need to have a home university affiliation in order for you to apply for the Fulbright program. Applications from artists and professionals are welcome, independent and emeritus scholars as well. So it's not just for university professors. And we also say many times that is the Fulbright scholar for me, but actually you should ask yourself, which Fulbright program is for me? And with that, I would like to turn over to my colleague, Michelle, to tell us more about the application resources, components, how to make a competitive application, and many other important aspects of the application process. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Aphrodita. As she mentioned, my name is Michelle Balorchi, and I will be leading the second half of the presentation. So far what you've heard is really kind of the background about the Fulbright program and what we offer, and now I'm going to be focusing a little bit more on how to apply, what resources we have available online, and how you can get an application started. So I really want to first point out the wealth of online resources that we have. Some of you who are familiar with the Fulbright program and our website know that there is a lot on our website, so it's really kind of a lot to navigate. Sometimes it's hard to find information, but we're going to kind of help you with that today. We're going to go online after this presentation and show you, you know, how you can look up an award that might be relevant to you, how to search the catalog, where to find information about how to contact previous scholars and things like that. So the first thing that I want to point out is our website is actually called CIES.org. So it doesn't have Fulbright in the name, but it is the website that has all the information about the U.S. Scholar Program. And I will be going over the catalog of awards, which is also linked on the site. We have the application link there, as well as some PDF instructions that you can download. And a lot of the wonderful resources that we have will also be featuring in webinars. So guidelines for the application, project statement guidance and samples, and different guidance for, you know, how to get a letter of invitation, how to reach out to a host, potential host host institution. And so all of that information we'll be going over today, as well as highlighting in more specific webinars when it gets closer to the deadline. We have different webinars that really kind of walk you through the application process. We also have a Fulbright Scholar blog, so you can check out some stories from grantees while they're out on their on the grant, you know, on the road. And the best way also to connect with us and get more information tailored to you and your discipline is to register at My Fulbright. That's CIES2.org. And if you register there after this webinar, if you haven't already done so, you can connect with us and stay up to date. Learn more about awards that pertain to your profile and the deadlines and things like that. Okay, so in terms of the application, it's fairly straightforward, but we do want to point out that each application will look different depending on the requirements of the award. So, for example, if you're applying for a teaching award, we would require different things than if you were applying for a research award. And if you're applying for a combination of teaching and research, for your grant activity, you will be submitting all kinds of things. So let's kind of go through that. Although the competition doesn't launch until next month, this is a great opportunity for you to prepare yourself and kind of start thinking about how you can, you know, apply for a grant, what kind of grant would be good for you, and what the components are. So in terms of the application itself, you're going to be going online and starting that application form once the competition opens next month. And you can work on it as long as you like. You just save it and then, you know, log out. And every time you do that, your information is saved. And then once you're finished, you would then hit the submit button before August 1st. And then you will have joined the competition. So you go in and fill out the application online. And the second part of it, the huge component of the application, is really the project statement. This is really kind of the heart of the application. It's your chance to state really why you are interested in the Fulbright, how Fulbright as a program would help you accomplish your goals, and we'll be getting into exactly what all should go into the project statement. So that's your chance to really kind of speak to us about what you hope to do. And that is a 5-page limit. There's a 3-to-5-page limit for that. We also require your CV or your resume, and there's also a page limit for that. So just keep in mind, everything has page limits for this, so we do ask that you tailor your CV accordingly. And then you'll be asked for 3 letters of reference, and the way you would do that is give the name and contact information of the 3 recommenders, and then they would be contacted by email. So we can only accept letters of reference through the portal. We can't accept emailed letters. And you can start thinking about, you know, which 3 colleagues you would reach out to. You know, now is a great time to kind of think about who you'd want to reach out to, ask for those letters of recommendation. And then, as I mentioned, depending on the award, we would need the following items. So for teaching awards, we would need a minimum of 2, maximum of 3 course outlines or syllabi. That also has a page limit of 10 pages total. So be sure to kind of really tailor the content that you're sending to us. It's always good to have 1 standby syllabus that you've used in the past, and then you're more than welcome to tailor the other 2 if you like for that particular project that you're applying for. And then the bibliography for research awards or any award that has a research component, again, that has a 3-page limit. We ask that you give us kind of the state of the art of the research, you know, the latest references that you've used in crafting your proposal. And then again, also depending on the award, if your research requires that you have a level of language proficiency, we ask that you attach that as well and you reach out to one of your colleagues in the language department who can do that for you. Keep in mind for teaching awards, all of the teaching is done in English, so we don't require that you're not usually required to provide a language proficiency report. That usually comes up for any awards where research would require some fluency in the local language. And then the letter of invitation. This is also kind of the second biggest thing I would say if we had to kind of rank things of importance in the overall application package. The letter of invitation oftentimes is required by the award, and we'll show you how you can determine if an award requires a letter of invitation and how you can go about contacting relevant hosts. For partner awards where, let's say, it's Fulbright with the University of Manchester, then it clearly outlines that you will be placed in Manchester if you're selected, so you would have to reach out to the University of Manchester, for example. Otherwise, if it's not required, if it's an option, feel free to reach out if you like. Some awards do not require, they ask you do not make any contact with the host. They don't want you to engage with any kind of contact with the host because they will place you accordingly. So just kind of paying attention to see if the award requires a letter of invitation or not. Sometimes they also mention they strongly prefer a letter. So that's also there. And then lastly, depending on your background, applicants from the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism are required to submit samples of their work. And again, we also have a limit on how much you can submit. All of that information is on our website in the application. So if you are in arts, architecture, writing, or journalism, please provide us a kind of a small portfolio of some of your work. Okay, so as I mentioned, the project statement is really your chance to shine in this application process. Again, it's a 3-page minimum, 5-page maximum. We do ask that you keep it to 12-point font, but you really have that much time. You know, it's a small kind of page limit to really tell us everything that you can in detail. So the key here is to be as specific as possible about the project and to really address the questions and bullet points that I've outlined here on the slide. So why Fulbright and why this particular country or host institution? Really to just keep in mind to focus on what you plan to do, if you're planning to teach, what specific courses, if you're planning to research, an outline of the methods and the goals of the research. And another important point, and this is what we always look for when we have the committees come together, is really what have you identified, have you discussed the potential outcomes from this grant? You know, what is the importance that you go to that particular country and do that research? What would be the impact at the host institution or the host country? What would be the impact at your home institution when you come back? And also for you as a professional or as an academic, how would you benefit from going on a Fulbright to that particular country, conducting that particular grant activity, either teaching or research or both? So really kind of addressing all of those key points. Why do you need to be in that particular country? You know, we also want to see, if you're just going to be utilizing data sets, someone can make the argument, well, you don't really need to go to that country. You can still sit in your office at Ohio State or at the University of Illinois, and you can do all of your research there. So we really want to see that justification as to why you also need to go to that country. And then lastly, addressing your adaptability and your adjustability, how can you handle challenges? We all know that going outside of our comfort zone or going outside of our institution or home country, we can't really expect the same setup, the same kind of timelines that we may have factored in for research projects or teaching things that we have set up here. So kind of having that plan B or, you know, realizing that things may not go according to plan, kind of adjusting for that. Mentioning it at some point in the project statement is really helpful for the review committees because it goes through various stages in the review process for everyone, all stakeholders, to realize that you've got a great plan, you've put it together, you've done your homework, you know what, you kind of anticipate how things may be on the ground. Of course, you can never anticipate fully, but just to give the readers an idea that this is a feasible project and it's going to have an impact. And that you outline the specific time that this project would take and that it all matches up with what the host is also interested in. Let's say you're applying for a grant for 4 months, that if you do have a letter of invitation, that matches up. Yes, we're hosting so-and-so for the 4 months. He or she will be here during that time and teaching or researching XYZ. And so having it all kind of add up makes for a great project statement. Okay, so again, the second really important point, as I mentioned, is kind of the affiliation or invitation, if it's required. And even if it's not required, we always encourage applicants to kind of gauge the interest of a potential host. Reach out to a potential host if you're allowed to. Again, there's just a handful of awards in the catalog that specifically request that you do not seek out a host institution. However, the vast majority of awards require or strongly prefer a letter from the host institution. And so, you know, we're going to give you some guidance on that. So in the case where the host is identified, you will find that listed in the award details in the catalog. And, you know, they'll give you the contact information. They may give you the commission contact. So we do provide you that information. In the scenario where the host is not identified, it's really up to the applicant to determine the host institution. So this is where the onus falls on you, and there's various ways to kind of get that information. You may contact your liaison on campus, the Fulbright liaison. Most campuses have at least one or two. They usually sit either in the international office or in the grants office or the fellowships office, so you might want to seek that person out. We have all of the names of the Fulbright liaisons on our website. If you click on the on-campus tab once you get up to the landing page. Another really great way to reach out to different hosts is to check out our Fulbright Scholar Directory. And so this is a wonderful tool, and I'll be showing that after the presentation, where you can do an advanced search, and let's say you were interested in the University of Potsdam in Germany, you could do a search of that as a host institution, typing that in as the host, and it would pull up all of the Fulbright grantees that have gone and been placed at the University of Potsdam. Or let's say you're based at the University of California, Los Angeles, and you'd like to know who else on your campus has gone on a Fulbright grant. Maybe they'd have some advice. You can check out by home institution, so typing in UCLA. You can also, let's say you are from the communications discipline and you want to see where have scholars gone who are in your field and you'd like to know which institutions they've been placed in. So you can do a discipline search and type in communications and see all of the U.S. scholars who've gone abroad under a Fulbright Core grant. So there's lots of ways that you can use the Scholar Directory. I highly recommend it. We also provide not only their project title, what they did, but of course their name and contact information. So it's a great way to engage with Fulbrighters who have gone and done similar work or in institutions that you're hoping to reach out to. Maybe they have a contact they could share with you. And then also taking a look, as I mentioned, sometimes the award would list a potential, the country commission or some contacts at the universities or within the country that you can reach out to and ask for assistance in identifying a potential host. So that's one thing. And when you do contact a potential host, it's always good to you know, let them know that you're applying for a Fulbright grant, send them your CV, send it as an attachment, give a little background as to what you hope to do, and to contact the person that you hope to collaborate with. Now, keep in mind, in terms of the letter of invitation, it is a non-binding expression of interest from the proposed host. So if you think about it, for those partner awards, let's say, again, let's use the example of Fulbright and the University of Manchester, they would be getting a lot of applicants who are interested in applying for that award, so they might be issuing a kind of a standard letter of invitation. So we might see the same letter signed by the same faculty person on all of our applicants' applications. And that's fine, but keep in mind that, you know, this is non-binding. So even though they've furnished the letter of invitation for you, ultimately it rests with the final decision as to who will be placed at that host institution. Ideally, the letter of invitation should come from the person with whom you hope to collaborate with, and it should be on the letterhead, and that's what we ask. Ideally, you would also have listed the time frame, the grant length. Again, if you're applying for a four-month grant, but the letter of invitation says 2 months, you know, that doesn't show kind of that the matchup is there. So we're looking to see that everything kind of checks out and that they are, you know, looking to host you for the time that you hope to be there. So all of that should be there as well. Okay, so far we've talked about those different components, and those actually, all the things that I've discussed on the project statement and the letter of invitation, all of that will kind of feed into how you, into your, you know, submitting a competitive application. So really going through, and this is why it's a great time, even though the competition doesn't launch yet until March, you know, all of the information is up on the website. You can read all about, you know, all the different things that I've alluded to and go in depth. We have the FAQs and everything posted there. So in terms of submitting a competitive application, be sure that you address all of these points here, and I've already kind of alluded to some of them, addressing Fulbright, you know, why as to why you hope to go on a grant with Fulbright. You know, there's a lot of other grant organizations and foundations, but why particularly Fulbright? Keep in mind the mission and the values of Fulbright are really kind of that promoting mutual understanding and cross-cultural exchange. All Fulbrighters are, at the end of the day, cultural ambassadors, and so really, you know, using this grant also as a kind of cultural diplomacy, you will be, you know, it's people-to-people kind of diplomacy. So if that's of interest to you as well, wonderful. We want to hear about it. And why that particular country? Okay, so keeping all of this in mind, that all of these things should be addressed in the project statement. And really, again, as my colleague Aphrodita, you know, mentioned about selecting the right award, that really is kind of half of the battle, if we call it, you know, in terms of identifying what your professional background and expertise and matching it up to the right award, right, really finding the best fit. I can't underscore that enough. Again, as I mentioned, demonstrating flexibility, adaptability, you know, any kind of challenges that may come up for that cultural diplomacy component, and discussing and alluding to outcomes, impact, and really that multiplier effect. You know, not that you just go to a particular country, do your grant, come back, and that's it. We always like to see how the engagement continues, how the collaboration continues. So not just for you, but your home campus, maybe for your students, how you would hope to engage continually with the host or your collaborator through professional you know, links or ways that you could sustain the relationship. Maybe having them come over as a Fulbright visiting scholar. I mean, there's lots of ways. And then how you can internationalize your campus and curriculum. So as long as you kind of discuss that multiplier effect, we're always looking to see that. So if you're interested in kind of, you know, if this may be the right thing for you, it would be coming out and we'd be reading about it in your project statement. So really kind of addressing all of that, because Fulbright really does have the two components. The one component of promoting research and teaching abroad, people to people, and the second component, of course, is, you know, the cultural diplomacy. All right, to give you an idea of how the timeline is and what to look out for each step of the way, we will be launching the new award competition in March, and it closes in August. August 1st is the deadline, August 1st, 2018. Once that passes, the full month of August is dedicated to reviewing for technical eligibility. We check to see if you're a U.S. citizen. Does your award, if your award requires a certain degree requirement, do you have it? So just making sure that the application is complete and that you are eligible for that particular award. Then in September, our discipline review takes place where the committees review the applications in their discipline. And so these are, again, colleagues that are in your field. And so they're going to check that for, they're going to check your project statement for, you know, the soundness and the feasibility of the project. And then September to early November, the U.S. peer committee reviews take place here in Washington, D.C., and this is where it's really important to be able to, and I forgot to mention it earlier, this is really where it's important to have your project statement reviewed not only by colleagues in your discipline, but also by colleagues outside of your field so that it's accessible and clear to everyone, whether they're from your field of expertise or not. Because keep in mind, if your application goes all the way to the final round, which would then be November to January, you would be recommended, let's say, for the final round, which is the in-country review and the review by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. And so keep in mind, they may or may not be from your background, and they might not understand the jargon or the relevance of a particular project. And so one of the key pieces of advice that we always tell applicants is to please have your project read by people in and outside of your discipline to ensure that it's clear and accessible to the reader. After that, if you've gone through the peer review committee, as I mentioned, it'll go for in-country review, so the applications are either forwarded, recommended, or not. Grantees have been notified of their final approvals from February to May, so commissions have different timelines, but overall, everyone gets notified by May, and then grantee packets are sent out to the grantees, the selected applicants in May and June, and we do hold a pre-departure orientation for grantees who will be placed in countries that do not have in-country commissions, and that takes place in Washington, D.C. at the end of June. And then after that, you're free to go and start your grant. You're on your merry way for the fall term or the spring term of 2019 and 20. As Aphrodita mentioned earlier, we do have what we call the IEA seminars. These are for international education administrators. They're only offered in a few countries, but they're wonderful opportunities for staff who are directly involved in internationalizing their home institution. Keep in mind the IEA seminars, they're two-week seminars. These are really kind of exposure visits. We have different deadlines, so for India that would be coinciding with the normal August 1st, the regular scholar grant deadline, August 1st. And then Japan, Korea are November 1st, and France, Germany, Feb 1st. And then we also have a opportunity specifically for the community college administrators, and that is to Russia, and that deadline is October 15. So as I mentioned, these are two-week seminars. You'll be going, normally the size of the groups are about 10 to 15, depending on the country. And typically the first visit will be in the capital of the country, and then they usually like to arrange two other cities so that you can get an exposure to you know, different kinds of institutions in that country. They are exposure visits. We don't expect any kind of agreements or MOUs to be signed during those 2 weeks, but it's a wonderful opportunity to get an understanding of what opportunities exist to engage with institutions abroad. And so the IEA seminars are offered every year in these countries. Okay, so now shifting gears a little bit, and then I want to kind of go quickly through this so we do have some time for questions. We've been talking about the U.S. scholar side of the program, but keep in mind the other side of the program is the visiting or the non-U.S. scholar program. So just like how you as an applicant from the United States would be applying to go abroad, we have opportunities for scholars all over the world to do the same. They can apply and come on over to the United States and teach and research. And so there's the core program as well. We have what's called the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, which I'll go over, and then the Outreach Lecturing Fund, which are more short-term engagements on U.S. campuses. The CORE Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program is a wonderful way for scholars from abroad to come and research. Primarily, it's research that's done in the United States. And I was speaking to the multiplier effect earlier. This is a great way, let's say, for if you have gone on a Fulbright grant and you come back and you'd like to have your, you know, the collaborator that you had in that country come to your campus or come to the United States and do the same, have the same kind of opportunity. You can nominate that person. You can tell them all about the scholar program. They would apply through their Fulbright Commission in that country or the embassy. And so IIE administers the program once they reach the United States. We help with the visa and the logistical support. However, they would need to apply at their from their home country, and more information is available on our website under the Visiting Scholar Program. I mentioned the Scholar in Residence Program. This is also a wonderful opportunity specifically for undergraduate campuses. This is an institution-driven program where institutions sign up and apply to host a foreign scholar, and they primarily teach undergraduates. This is a wonderful way to not only send your scholars abroad, but to engage with Fulbright by bringing scholars into the country, providing a cross-cultural and international perspective on your campus. The deadline for this is October 15th. The options are to host the scholar for one semester or a full academic year. So if you have any questions or are interested in that program, please email us at SIR, it's sir@iie.org, or check out our website for more information. And the Outreach Lecturing Fund is also another institution-driven program. If you're not able to have a scholar for the full academic semester or year, this is a wonderful way to have a scholar come and come from anywhere from 2 to 6 days on a short-term teaching arrangement where they would host a workshop or a seminar. This is the travel grant to provide Fulbright scholars from abroad who are already based in a U.S. institution near yours to come and share their experiences, what research they're doing, or their field of expertise. So this is a wonderful way to another way to engage with the Fulbright program. And again, we refer to the Fulbright program, really it's the umbrella kind of for a bunch of programs that we refer to, it's a suite of programs. So you may have also heard about the Arctic Initiative or the Specialist Program, which are other short-term opportunities. Then of course we have the U.S. Student Program. So this is a wonderful way to, again, have another level of engagement at your campus by sending students abroad. And there's several opportunities for them, whether it's teaching English, or researching, or doing a master's degree for the year. And then we have the Fulbright Distinguished Awards in Teaching. That's primarily for primary and secondary level educators, as well as the Fulbright Hayes Award for faculty, research, or group projects relating to the humanities or social sciences. All right, so as I mentioned earlier, please connect with us on My Fulbright. The website for that is CIES2.org. If you have any questions that we're not able to get to during this webinar, please email me. It's mbalorchi@iie.org or my colleague in New York, Aphrodita Krasniki at iie.org. Also visit our website. Keep in mind that each of the awards in the catalog also has a direct phone line and email address that you can contact for the expert who's in charge of that particular world region. And finally, to refer your colleagues, if you've been on a grant, you know how great it is to have that experience, we definitely encourage you to reach out to your colleagues and refer them about the program. And as always, Fulbright has evolved, and we are very active on social media, so check us out. We've got Facebook, we've got Twitter, we've got Instagram, we've got all these different ways to read about the Fulbright program in all of its forms, whether it's the student program or the scholar program. And so really this is a wonderful way to engage and learn more about the program and get involved. So I think now what we'll do is we'll turn it over to the, I want to show you now the awards catalog and show you how you can navigate and kind of search through what we offer. So if you just bear with us, we're going to get you the, here we go. Yes, all right. So we are on the landing page here. And I'm just going to expand it there. Thank you. All right, great. And so this is the CIES.org. This is our main website. This is the landing page here. And you'll see different tabs up here where you can click and get more information. We talked about the core today. For those of you that are Fulbright liaisons, there's a virtual toolkit, and there's different information here. If you'd like to find who is the liaison at your campus, you can do that as well. And then if we scroll down, we can see here we've got the link for the catalog of awards, the Fulbright Scholar Directory, and if you click here, you can go directly to the registration for the My Fulbright. But let's go back to the catalog of awards. And right now, since the competition from last year has closed, it's going to show you just kind of an empty page. If you just click on View Closed Awards, you can see that last year, so the 2018-19 academic year, so the competition for last year, we offered 471 awards. So as Aphrodita mentioned, we send about 800 U.S. scholars abroad, but out of that, there's 471 awards. So that means a lot of awards have more than one grant opportunity. So for example, last year India had 45 grants for one particular award. So keep that in mind that there's 470 awards, but there's the grants far outweigh that number. So if we, this is now the kind of the default of the awards catalog. March 1st, we'll have the new catalog, and it'll be slightly enhanced, but the format will be fairly, pretty much the same. Now, when you do the search, you can search by region and see if we just click here, for example, let's see, where do we want to click? Maybe East Asia, let's try that. And see, you can also click by discipline. And let's say, well, I'm from American history. and you can do a search here. And you can see that out of the 471, it brought us down to 10 when we narrowed that search. And what you if you want to, you can change the view, and then you can quickly see the name of the ward, the title, the country, and what activity is offered. All right. So here you can see some awards are just for teaching, others allow for teaching and research, and some are just research awards. So if we just click on this one here, I'm going to just kind of guide you through looking at an award and how you would find out all the information that I've kind of referred to earlier. And keep in mind, you can also, again, apply for, register for the My Fulbright up here if you didn't find the link. All right, so here we are on this particular award. For the new catalog, the awards will start with 9, so that way you'll know that you're applying to the right one. It'll be the 9,000 series. So this is U.S.-Philippine relations. We first see in the first tab the award details, all of the information that they want us to see here, what grant activity it should be research related to this, the grant length here, 3 to 4 months, all right. And then they give us a stipulation that they must start either in August or January, so that probably coincides with the semester start. And in terms of locations, any appropriate institution, including those outside of Metro Manila. So there's probably an interest and a preference in sending scholars to cities that don't always get the attention that maybe Manila gets, the capital. And then if there's a flex option, Aphrodite had talked about the flex option, so in this case there isn't. And then any particular discipline, so I had searched for American history, and that's good to know because that's one of the preferred disciplines. So as we mentioned, you know, half of the task is really finding that best fit of an award, so searching to see if your discipline is listed in the preferred disciplines. Because keep in mind, we do have a lot of awards that are all-discipline awards. And so if it's an all-discipline award, it may be difficult for you to decide, should I apply for that, because you'll be competing with a bunch of other people from different backgrounds. But if it's a preferred discipline, then the chances are the commission in that country is very interested in having people from these different disciplines. So keep in mind that all of the writing and the language that you see in these in the award catalog comes directly from the commissions and the embassies abroad. This is something that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the funding for Fulbright is actually binational and bilateral. So a lot of our support comes from abroad as well. And so those countries are looking for particular talented scholars and professionals to come and do particular things in their country. So that's why it's always great to search different awards to see where you would match up best. Now, if we look on the right side, you can see how many grants are offered and what specific activity is required or preferred. So here it's just research. That's all you can choose. And this says it's open to all levels of scholars, including early career. So that's great. And a PhD is not required. Here you can see the direct phone line to our colleague who manages the East Asia Pacific region. You can also email the team here and get direct information about the award. And then if we click back up here on the award requirements, we have more information about the letter of invitation. Here it says it's optional. And then again, they give us some information about the language. So it's important to kind of go through all of this. It's all here. And they've been helpful by giving us some links to the Educational Foundation, the Philippine American Educational Foundation, the Department of State in the Philippines, the Embassy in the Philippines. And so there's a lot of information to go through. Taking a look at here at the applicant profile, open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. But then here, it mentioned terminal degree is preferred or equivalent professional experience. So really kind of paying attention to all the different nuances and different guidelines. Here they're saying applicants without terminal degrees should have at least 10 years of work experience. So just keeping all of that in mind. You can also click on the award benefits to see what the stipend is, if there's any dependent allowance, and if there's any special benefits. And then finally, the last tab, giving a little bit of an overview about that country. So that is essentially the way you can look at an award in the catalog. And then if you click on the requirements, I want to just point out the different guidelines that we have, and then we'll wrap it up and take some questions. So here you can see we've got different checklists depending on the grant activity. So if you were to click on teaching awards, you'd have the specific things you need. I'm going to click here because teaching and research awards require everything from the other two. So here you have different things hyperlinked. As I mentioned, you know, we've got the guidance for the project statements. You can even check out some sample project statements, information about the tailored CV, the bibliography, your course syllabi, your reference letters and requirements and tips for submitting those. All of this information is here. And then how you can develop contacts abroad, as well as your language proficiency and supplemental materials. And then you can go down here and click on the application. So this is a wonderful resource to have, another great tool. And then the last thing that I would point out would be if we go back here to the core, you can see some different tabs here on eligibility. We go through all of that. If you're on the Fulbright specialist roster, that's fine. We have some information about that. If you go to the application itself, we always like to point applicants to the review criteria. And to really go through this before you submit your application, or while you prepare your application, ideally, taking a look at the review criteria, because this is really what the committees look at when they are reading your application. If you're applying for a teaching award, are you a good match to the award? Do you have the ability and the requisite experience teaching at, you know, at the higher education level, post-secondary? Does the application have quality, and do they address feasibility issues? Do you discuss outcomes and potential impacts and benefits? If it's a research award that you're applying to, they're going to check out the intellectual merits of the proposal, the suitability, the feasibility, and as I mentioned, that need for residents in the host country to complete the project. Evidence of the host institution's interest, and if they're providing any affiliation. Outcomes and potential benefits, again. So we're looking at all of this in the review criteria. Again, personal qualities, we discussed that as well. So keep in mind, all of this is here on the website. I know there's a lot to go through, but it's really important that you make use of all this information because you'll have about 5 months from the time the competition opens to the time of the deadline. So again, I think I would just end here and thank you for attending the webinar, taking your time out. We usually host webinars on Wednesdays. We like to call them Webinar Wednesdays, usually from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You can actually see the next webinars. We have them advertised on our website. Go down at the bottom and you can see our schedule. And so right now, these are the upcoming webinars that I'd like to highlight. So right now we're in this one, which is the overview, but there's going to be one on Europe and Eurasia, East Asia. So we have different regions that will be providing information about those particular regional awards. So I encourage you to just register for those that you think you might be interested in, really kind of get the sneak peek. We also like to host alumni in our webinars. So for example, on some of the spotlight webinars, we may be joined with alumni who can share their experience in Mexico or in India. So check back on that. And then we like to archive webinars in the past. So you can see here what we've got in the past, you know, scholar in residence, if you'd like to host a scholar in residence on your at your campus. And so there's lots of things. These are all recorded and archived. You can get the audio portion. You can get the PowerPoint and download that. And so the website has a wonderful, toolkit you could really use and kind of enhance your application. So I think we'll end it here, and I think we've kind of been answering questions. All right, we're going to be answering questions. All right, so let's see what we've got. We can, even though it's a little after 3, I think we can hang on for a few minutes and see what questions have come up. All right, so let me go through our list. Aphrodita, did you want to take any questions? Do you see any that you'd like to go ahead and answer?
Sure. You answered most of the questions, I think. And in particular, is it possible to get a copy of this presentation that somebody asked? And you just walked us through that process, and you can find this presentation archived on the webinar section at the webinars. So, and then also, is there a way to look up how many applicants were there for each award historically? Unfortunately, we cannot disclose this information, but just keep the focus on the award that would match your expertise or your background and experience, and focus on that, because there's so many opportunities, so many awards, and we just would like you to encourage to consider applying for the award that you're interested in. And then is a new associate professor considered an early career? Again, it's every award is different, usually yes. Generally, this would mean yes. It's up to 5 years after one has obtained the PhD level. So, yes, that would be an answer. And if you want to take on some of the other questions, Michelle?
Sure, sounds good. Okay, so we had a question about is it possible to partner with a nonprofit for research? So I would say the answer is yes, but it also depends on the specific award. For some countries, they have a clear idea that they just want their grantees to be placed in universities. However, there are some awards that say that clearly outline potential host institutions can be think tanks, research centers, museums, et cetera. And so it's really important to, if it's not mentioned clearly in the award description, to reach out to us or to the Fulbright Commission in that country and get some clarification about where they'd like to see their grantees. So there's that. The other question I see here, can grants begin in the same summer they are awarded, or does one need to wait until fall or spring, relevant to the Southern Hemisphere, for example? Well, I can also say this is relevant to India as well, because in India they have what's called the monsoon semester, which starts in July itself. And so, yes, you can, depending on the award, it has to be outlined in the description, but they will mention clearly when they can start. So for India, for example, for that All Disciplines Award, they can start as early as July of the year that you get that grant. So if you're notified, for example, now, you could even start in July this year. So the grantees that are getting their notifications for this past awards competition can start as early as July and be back in time to teach at their home institution in the fall. So it all depends. Again, the main thing to think about is it really depends on the particular award description. So as I mentioned, each country provides us with the wording for the catalog, and we just kind of pull it all together and administer it. So it really needs to address what the country is looking for. So there's that.
Michelle, if I may just add the questions that one asked. Are program officers identified by country or region to obtain additional insight and information? If you can just show us, Michelle, the section where contact us, it's easy to find on our website. And there we have for each region, we have an email address, and you can contact us with any questions you have, and we will respond to you very, very shortly after that.
Right, exactly. And just speaking back to the question about can you obtain this PowerPoint presentation, it takes us about 3 business days. So from 3 business days from today, we'll have this particular PowerPoint presentation recording up on the website. So that'll probably be by Monday at the latest, I would say. All right, great. So let us take a look at the next question.
Michelle, if I may just answer one question. We have a question about medical fields. Actually, we have 2 questions about that, about medical fields and pharmacy. You can have projects in these fields on Fulbright, but please keep in mind you cannot practice medicine. So you cannot touch a human body, you cannot do any surgery, you cannot involve these activities. As long as they are just like related to public health maybe or policies, that's certainly an opportunity in the Fulbright program.
Okay, so let's see what else have we got. Okay, so someone's asking who pays for all of this, what funding is provided. So keep in mind that this is funded by the Fulbright program. So this is something that would be good to mention when you reach out to potential hosts. I have seen in the past that sometimes the host, they may or may not have hosted a Fulbright grantee before in their country or their institution. And so they might not be aware that you will be coming on a funded, you know, kind of a fellowship, a scholarship, and so they do not need to provide anything other than just the willingness to collaborate with you. Maybe they'll give you a desk space or an office space. And so just letting your host institution know that you are applying for a Fulbright grant to go to their country, to their host institution. We do provide information on the award benefits in terms of the travel costs, the living expenses. Some awards provide housing at that particular institution if that's a partner award. So as I mentioned, each award is very different, so it really depends on which award you're applying to. So, you know, the grants are all different in terms of budgets and amounts. So really making sure that you apply to a grant that makes sense for you as well to go for that long or however long the grant is. All of that information is there on the award description and the award details. Other funding provided, for example, would be some awards offer, once you're already in the country on the grant, some awards offer regional research, regional travel grants. So, for example, if you are in India on a grant and you'd like to give a lecture in Nepal that's within the region, you'd be able to apply for the South and Central Asia travel grant, and that would allow you to you know, have funding to be able to do a 1 or 2 week workshop or lecturing or teaching or some research, whatever relates to your project, in that other country in that region. So that's some other funding options available as well.
So Michelle, in terms of the funding also, we have a question about Fulbright and finances. If I get a funding from the university, so basically grants are not finalized until conferral, so you have to tell us basically if you have any additional funds though. So we have to know that before the final grant is done. So this is very important to update us. So, but this is something you will have to worry later on. You know, now you need to worry about the application, the competition cycle, and all of the other steps.
Right, great. And let's see, there's another question about what is the expected breakdown for teaching and research awards in terms of the ratio of teaching and research. That's a good question because actually, once again, it will depend on that particular award. Some awards say it's up to the applicant to determine that ratio, if you want to do 50-50 or 40-60. However, some grants mention specifically, like there's an award to Nepal that specifically says 80% of the grantee's time will be devoted to teaching and just 20% to research. So again, keep that in mind. If it does not list the ratio or if there's any preference at all, it's up to the applicant. And you should clearly mention that in your project and kind of justify as to why you know, you're breaking it down in that way. If research is more important to you, then maybe you'll only propose one teaching. And so we want to check to see if it's all feasible. So that's a good question. So again, if it's not clearly mentioned in the award, it is up to the applicant. And there's no particular preference unless it's you know, clearly stipulated in the award.
Yeah, and we have a question about do we have the flexibility to work with the host nation and work our government to execute the grant? So basically, as we mentioned earlier, the vast majority of the host institutions are education institutions, but they also include government institutions. So yes, you are you have the flexibility to work with government institutions and like ministries or Ministry of Education or other ministries that depending on the award or the partnership that the award has on that particular opportunity.
Okay, great. Well, we have run out of time, so I hope that this webinar was you know, informative and really kind of answered a lot of your questions. Again, 2 days later, you'll be able to get our archive and look forward to assisting you. We look forward to assisting you with your application. And again, mindcies.org, and the application deadline is August 1st. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.